Okay, it's nice to have this chance to talk something about this topic. And I didn't expect that my PhD advisor, my colleagues, will be here. So kind of nervous.
That's a bonus.
So this is my outline, and this with a short introduction. There are three topics I want to cover, shown here. That's layer instability by selection orientation by layer instability, and layer orientation by just dislocations. And the third topic will be the simple defect loop dynamics model to explain some rheology data. So lamellar phase is quite common in nature, especially in the soft matter. And here I just list three examples. The first one on the left, upper left, will be somatic liquid crystal. And usually the somatic crystal formed when temperature is low. It's in lower temperature compared to the pneumatic liquid crystal. And on the bottom left is diabolical polymer, where a polymer is formed by forming two distinct chain of polymer, where the red blue is blue and the green is to be representing two different polymers, and they are binded covalently, and it's low temperature that they tend to like to separate, but because of this connectivity, they could form the microscopic separation, and at suitable ratio of these two polymers, laminar phase will form. And the third example is the surfactant system, where the system can consist of these molecules with two parts. One is hydrophilic, one is hydrophobic. So when this kind of molecules is mixed with the water, for certain surfactant molecule and certain temperature conditions, that laminar phase will form. Of course, in the case of broccoli polymer and surfactant system, there are other kind of morphology will form under different conditions. But of course, today I would like to address the problem of laminar phase. When the system forming laminar phase is quenched into the laminar forming condition, usually it's temperature, or sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's the concentration, such as the system in allotropic liquid crystal. Usually the system is forming like in the B, in the case of B, that the system is separated into different domains, which each domain is oriented forming a laminar phase, but oriented in different directions. And very often, good alignment on a whole sample could be achieved by applying shear on the system. like the arrow I draw here, that the shear is in the fixed bottom plate and the moving top plate in this direction. And this comes the laminar will come out in two possible orientations. It's as illustrated in these two pictures. It's just that, and in a community of polymers, they put the usual name is parallel grains in this case, and perpendicular grain in this case. So then that brings out the subject of this talk, that what is the orientation of a laminar phase under a shear flow, under an action of shear flows, and as the shear flow is represented in this picture, there are three possible orientation. Of course, there could be all intermediate states, but of course, but in most experiments, this is the most the principal one to be considered. For example, this experiment on dipole polymers, and using, I think this is X-ray diffraction data. And this, in this data, particular data, that the peak in this angle, I think it's corresponding to a direction, a orientation here. This peak on a orientation here, and up at the application of a shear, that with time the peak in the a orientation is decreased, and gradually the peak appears as c orientation. So the interpretation of this experiment data is that the orientation is transformed from A to C by the action of shear.
But the triangles before the shear is before the shear, and they're at 90 also. So that 90 doesn't seem to change with time.
Yeah, that's right. That's in this case. I think that's before shear. They use a two different, the shear condition change for a particular shear condition. They reach this triangle data, and then they change into different shear condition.
But so that's not before the shear. The triangles is not before.
Yeah, not before shear, I think.
It's a different condition.
Yeah.
The other question.
Zero goes away. I think it's zero goes away.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's right.
Yeah, 0 and 180.
Right. The other thing is, if you don't impose a shear, you impose a boundary condition. So you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know what V is, right? What you impose is simply a boundary.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Of course, yeah. Of course, yeah, that's correct. The triple shear flow is just the situation. The flow could be much complicated in that case. So the idea to understand, to put some understanding, theoretical understanding on this behavior, and is one idea is to starting from this idea that the wave factor K will become how the wave factor is convected by shear flow. For example, in this case, in these three orientations, you can see that on application of shear flow, a change will tilt the layer in this way. That will correspond to change of wave factors. And so, if the system only consider as this adiabatic change of the layer position, that it can easily be shown that the wave factor is changed in this way. Here is the gamma. So you can see that only when the kx is not equal to zero, the wave factor will change. So if you are basing on this idea, of course, I don't mean that this idea could, it's a whole story, but if based on this idea, that some argument have been shown that if we doing a starting from a Landau-Ginzburg Hamiltonian, like this way to represent a generic phase separation, and the usual treatment of statistical mechanics will lead us to this two-point coherent function for particular wave factor is in this form, and this is give us this. A red as a sphere, that the coherent function could diverge on this shear, spherical shear of this green curve. But if with the application of shear, with the current shear, that this, because the, as in previous field graph, that's kx, any wave factor with a non-zero kx will change due to this non-vanishing gamma. So then the shear will collapse into a ring, on the yz plane, as you plane.
It will also diverge if it didn't have that degenerate signal.
Pardon?
The divergence of C does not depend on having the rotational effect.
Yeah. Probably the, yeah, that's right. I shouldn't, maybe I shouldn't say that here.
Sorry, I don't understand the orientation of the blue circle.
It's a circle. I intend to be as a circle on the YZ plane. A circle or something. I guess I didn't do a good job to make it straight.
It's in the YZ plane. It's perpendicular to X.
Yeah, perpendicular. This is a circle on the YZ plane. Okay.
Doesn't look that way to me, but maybe I should take off my glasses.
So the shear change, the any factor with a finite kx, so this divergence will collapse into the YZ plane, then the Tate and Miller shows that in this case the treatment of mechanics showing the correlation function after some approximation could lead to this formula. And then they argue that in this formula, the divergence k, if ky is equal to zero, because at the transition point or phase separation point, tau approach zero, and if ky equals zero, then the c divergence is kx squared, but if ky is not equal to zero, it's linearly divergent kx. So that means, so from this they argue that the system should mostly on the ky equals zero state, and that means system favor this orientation of the perpendicular alignment. So this is a way of arguing. So what I like to say is that this example of how the theory to attach approach this problem. Another way to approach this problem with SIG is that this is also is experimental data that so it's early time that the system is solid triangle that in a particular orientation, I think it's the same as on this A orientation, but with application of shear with time. In this case, the system did not directly produce a peak on the 90 degree and the 270 degree. Instead, they produce this two side peak, 20 side peak on the system. And the interpretation of this data is that the system is not changed directly from the one orientation to another. Instead, they have an instability on the original layer. So let's produce these two peaks. So with this data as a motivation, we think that maybe we could try to another approach to this system as previous that we approach this problem with a dynamical one that we write down, we hope to write down a dynamical equation to the system and to see whether the system, the dynamics could lead to the undulation, the zigzag of the plane. That of course this is similar to what actually I have done in the pattern formation system. So the way to do what we have, the way we done it is that so we starting with a Gibbs-Blender equation type dynamics to describe the evolution of this order parameter for phase separation, and using a suitable fringe density which lead to a laminar phase, and with the application of shear flow. So I like to say again, so with this is a dynamic, so for this boundless dynamic equation, you first find to construct a laminar, a steady state laminar solution, and then put into a perturbation into this laminar state, laminar phase, to see whether that laminar phase is stable or not. I think that's the basic idea. This is an example that there's two, for laminar phase, for example, in this one, for uniform laminar phase, for example, in this case, there are two possible ways to put in a perturbation to investigate the instability. And because the shear flow, these two is not identical, they will evolve differently due to the shear flow. And of course, corresponding, I didn't show that we can consider another direction that, as I said, maybe you can remember, this is what I called A orientation. Of course, we can also consider the orientation in C orientation, like this way, and they also have two possible zigzag directions, which also different due to the shear flow. So put all this consideration into the standard method of the pattern formation, that's the calculated instability under the shear flow. But of course, this is a little bit complicated, that because the shear flow, here the calculation is done in oscillating shear, and because the oscillating shear is the calculation become a little bit messy, that we need to consider a period. The system is not in a steady state. The solution need to be solved in a periodic solution of the oscillating shear. So that's just all complicated the calculation details. But here I want to show that what the result, the basic result is.
Can I ask, can you go back to the two slides back? B is the thing that gives, the capital B is the thing that gives the lamellar phase.
Yeah, lamellar phase.
The Leibler thing that gives the lamellar phase. Mm-hmm. That determines the Q norm.
Yeah, that's right.
And B is the imposed
velocity
shear?
Yeah, that's right.
And you impose it in the bulk or on the surface?
In this case, the calculation here is in the bulk. So in the bulk, the simplest way is to put a simple shear flow imposed on that. Of course, as you say, there's an experiment.
You address that question of how the shear is established. You just impose a shear which is oscillatory in time.
Yeah, that's right.
And a constant shear.
Yeah, shear motion, constant
shear. So that's the problem that you solve going
forward. But in the development of shear flow, I will also discuss it a bit later. Yeah, as Professor Hofenberg has indicated, that the V here, we just impose a simple shear flow, but the whole problem actually should be written also, the complete equation actually should be written a dynamical equation of the V with at least a term, osmotic pressure term from psi, and in that case, of course, the analysis will be much more complicated. Okay. So this is the basic result I want to show is that, so with all the secondary instability analysis, the result comes out that here I plot a region that the lamina will be stable. So the inside a small region bounded by the blue curve is the region where lamina will be stable in the plane of ky, actually, maybe I should care, ky direction and kx direction. And this is another direction, that is kz and kx. And the analysis find that the stable region in this KY and KX plane is much larger than the region in the KX, KZ and KX plane. And this is a simple, argument to indicate why this is the case, because you see that from the shear of the wave factor, that Q is changing by, in this way. Here A depends on the shear amplitude. And the delta Q here, I want to indicate that the component of K, the amplitude of Kx component. And at small delta, it is small delta Q, we can indicate that to have that Q, wave factor Q not change too much in a region in a certain range, that's say delta, we have this expression that delta Q over Q naught square must be smaller than some number.
Yeah, it's a little hard to see what's varying and what's how fixed here.
Can you tell us the directions of things again?
Okay, the KY, KX. So this picture is what I like to show on the upper graph.
First of all, you have a lamellar state with a K, with an X, and I'm the wave vector in what direction? Of your original lamellar state.
Yeah, so that was, so in this picture, let's see, so the shear flow is in this way. So this corresponding to the upper part of the picture here.
Wait. The original lamellar state has its wave vector in what direction?
In the y direction. Y direction. Yeah.
In the y direction.
Yeah.
Y into the board.
Yeah. And the shear plane is xz.
And
xy. Yeah.
And the shear
plane is in X and Y. X and Y, shear plane. And the lamellar in Y direction, that means this way. Shear plane is this way. Sorry.
No.
VX
depends on, V is only in the X direction, but its magnitude depends on Y.
So sometimes notation is changed. Sorry. So if I make it clear once again. So this direction. So this is called X, and this is called Z. And this is called Y.
Right.
Yeah.
And shear depends on Y.
Yeah, another picture.
And Z.
Velocity depends on Z. Yeah, velocity depends on Z, yeah.
Not on Y.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Well, but this case is a oscillatory shear, not a steady shear. So it's a coup. This is a finite amplitude of the shear. Yeah.
It's a parametric stabilization.
Yep. So this is a approach. The second approach that we seek would think could to shed some light on this problem that.
But you fixed omega and
amplitude. Yeah, that's right.
Delta, little delta, and omega.
Yeah, that's right. Different omega and different shear amplitude and shear frequency, of course, will change the size of the region of the blue. and maybe 1 minute to address a little, address that the one raised earlier that the velocity u, actually the in experiment the only fixed boundary, the experimental shear flow actually only fixed the boundary condition, and in that case the u is also become a dynamical variable need to be changed. So for this problem, at least in the polymer system, one possible way to consider this question is using an idea developed by Helfen and Fickerson and also Miller's and Anuki, that the simplest idea is that for polymer chain, simple way is to consider a polymer chain in a solution. Not if a polymer chain is stretched, then of course its natural tendency is to shrink to the original shape. But if there's a small variation of the density of polymer, that in this region, then this region will give a lower viscosity of the whole system. So for example, consider a system of polymer solution, a polymer embedded in a solvent. Then when there's a region of the smaller viscosity, that means the smaller polymer density, then the polymer could move faster because of the smaller viscosity. So the low density will be moved faster. High density of polymer will move slower. Then that's become instability. This is retracts faster and retracts slower. Then the whole polymer will shift to condensate into higher density states. That means the instability. That's the to build up this inhomogeneity. So the way to model this idea is that there should be a term like this term, that stress field. This is a polymer stress field should enter this equation, and then of course there should be a corresponding equation of velocity field. And based on this dynamical system, also we have also done some analysis that we can leading to a instability between these two states, but I will not to say further on this topic here. So this basically concludes my first also probably the longest subject I'll cover. So the next topic I'd like to say something about the defect, the role of defect in a layer state. So first is I want to show that there's two experiments suggesting that the defect dislocation line in a laminar phase should play important roles in a selection in orientation of the laminar phase, of course under shear. This experiment is a surveillance system that there's no shear on this. The first experiment shows that as temperature decreased from 35 degree to 14 degree, there's a transition of semantic to pneumatic phase. Semantic to pneumatical phase here is by dropping the temperature. Of course, a little bit puzzled that usually we have a increasing temperature to have a semantic to pneumatic phase. I think the interpretation of also is that in this case the phase transition from semantic to pneumatic is not due to the temperature thermodynamic entropic effects. It's due to this spontaneous curvature of the laminar phase, the dependence of that curvature on the temperature. So because of this dependence, so we have kind of inverse dependence of phase transition. And what I like to emphasize is that near the, I think this is pneumatic phase, near the transition at, let's say, 20 degree, they observe this kind of picture on the scattering data. And here it's shown in this picture. And on this scattering data, they impose this ISO curve, which is derived theoretically, not theoretically derived by, consider this screw dislocation in layer phase. So you just write down a layer phase, write down equation, just construct an equation which describes a describes the screw dislocation and calculate its scattering intensity. That's what I showed previously on the ISO curve. They find that it's a good match if this screw dislocation is a twin helix. That's a Burgers factor two helix. If that's the case, then they find that there's good match with experimental result. Good match with so.
That's where
this ISO curve and also the cross should be have a density. I think what they mainly do is match this point and match this point what they mostly done. And I think one way to argue this is that if the dislocation is a Burger vector one dislocation, then this cross point will be off by maybe say will be
different. One would say match, but the other thing you could put them anywhere, no?
No.
I think it's the crosses.
That comes from a doubling of the period or halving of the period.
Doubling of the period of the scoop. That's you see that this helix is a double helix that only have two times. They say only with this configuration that the position of the cross will match the peak of the scattering data. With the simple screw dislocation is which will be the location did not match. Of course this just the scattering data, for example the Burger factor 2 dislocation have a lot of at least two possible microscope configuration in this system that the system could the core region of the dislocation could be in this either way. There's no way to tell from experiments which one is the case if this is a interpretation of the screw dislocation is correct. I think they when they write down the equation of construct a dislocation in a layer system, then they know there's an equation describe all the layer orientation and the position. So basically they know all the layer position because at school there's some place will be tilted at least near the school. All the orientation will be known and then the scattering density could be calculated. Scattering in a solid system, if you know all the position or all the atoms, even you don't know what is the scattering density of each atom, you could plot where all the peaks should appear in a K space. as long as you know the all the position of the atom. And this is the similar case, as long as they assume that all the layer, the position and the angle of all the layers, they could to get the all the peak in
there. Why do you assume that it should be helical? And there's so many other
things. Yeah, of course. Maybe they tried different things, especially, but they didn't say it in the paper, I'm not sure. No. I think maybe the idea is that they want to do it a bit more simple geometry, starting from a simple geometry, and consider this a good a fit enough, good enough to say. So this is the first experiment. So the second experiment is that then they apply shear on this system. So you can see that again, this is symmetric to numeric transition from low high temperature to low temperature. Then now there's another axis describe the shear. And there's a lot of region in this phase diagram of the region on the right of this vertical line is the symmetric phase. And these are a lot of different regions. And of course, this C is the orientation of this. C is this orientation, And S is this Curiel phase of onion phase. But I won't discuss this today. L is a regular arrangement, layered arrangement of this onion phase. But I want to concentrate on this C transition from C orientation to A orientation by temperature near the numerical phase and with increasing shear rate. So
zero shear isn't even on
here. But this is log scale, so probably it's so it didn't shear.
Oh, it's
log of shear. Log of shear, yeah. And so they observe that this transition with the increasing of shear rate, the transition from C orientation to A orientation, maybe. So what is this? This is C, this is A. Okay. This is C orientation to A orientation. And then with even higher shear, there's a back transition back to the C orientation. And all the picture is the scattering data. And the interpretation by the authors is that in this region of phase space, the system in a C orientation phase with a dislocation loop in this way. Here the arrow is indicating the direction of the shear flow, and the layer because layer is in this direction, the vertical dislocation will be screw dislocation, and edge, and this tilted line is showing the edge dislocation. And different orientation will make the nature of the dislocation different this way. And because maybe I should go come back later. No, maybe let me see. So the argument is that there's in this region there's a fixed orientation a dislocation loop in this way, and this edge produce because the flow needs to flow past this dislocation line. So there's a lot of dissipation occurred in this location of these lines. And then when the shear flow is increased, there's a critical shear flow that the loop cannot support. Maybe we should consider that the shear flow apply a force on this edge to the right, and proportion to the left. So naturally you have a critical shear amplitude that the force is too large for a loop to sustain, then the system like to transfer into this orientation where the different loop could be in this direction, because the screw dislocation is suffer a much smaller force under flow. And the way they argue that back to the C orientation is that if the flow is really large, then no defect could be supported in the system. No defect could be supported in the system, then the solid cylinder go back to a system without any defect.
So if the defects dominate the scattering and the transition, the suggestion is that this phase is just full of these dislocations.
Yeah, I think how many is dominant?
But not just a few isolated dislocations.
Oh no, not a few isolated. Okay, yeah. Okay. So I like to emphasize that this experiment data suggesting that the defect loop plays a role in orientation, and this implication on left, of course, is just hand-waving arguments. There's actually, for example, there's no good way to see experimentally whether there are really a lot of defects in this direction, or how many defects in this rotation, how many defects. This is difficult to be done in experiment. So this need to be considered just an argument. So. But however, we want to consider this, if we want to further consider this idea that whether the defect effect have a strong effect on orientation, but we find that this kind of difficult problem, we do not, it's kind of difficult to approach how to consider that defect change orientation. So we start from a little simpler things, that to consider how a laminar phase symmetrically crystal, how the rheology of that laminar phase is affected or influenced by the presence of defect loop. Of course, this problem on its own right is a problem very interesting, that what's the rheology of a semantic phase. And this is experimental data that showing the shear rate as a function of shear stress for three different systems. I think this is semantic crystal. This is Bock polymer solution. A semantic phase, all in semantic phase. And this is the three different systems, they make a rheology measurement changing the stress and measure shear rate or either way. And they find that the relation between the stress and shear rate shows the two distinct characteristics is that first one is very viscous compared to the water, for example, If the system, the layer system is a perfect layer, especially in a surfactant system, you can say the layer, what is water between the layer. So if all the layer is aligned perfectly and you shear this way, there really no reason to expect that the viscosity should be bigger than water too much, should be on the same order with the water if you have all the layer with water inside and they shear this way. But the experiment shows that it's not the case. The viscosity of this kind of system actually is much larger than the water, maybe 100 times larger than water. So that's the...
How do you, this is a simple question, how do you infer the viscosity from the absolute amount or from the flow?
It's just the ratio of the, would be just the ratio between stress and stress and the rate. And of course, not a constant here. Mm-hmm. Of course, that will not be a constant, because the slope here is not one.
but it's the coefficient. So it's the absolute.
Absolute ratio, yeah.
Amount.
Yeah.
Right.
And what I emphasize is that ratio is much larger than water, maybe 100 times. So that's need to make people believe that the viscosity of this kind of system should be dominated by the contribution of the defect. And this contribution also give a shear thinning behavior, that viscosity actually decrease as the shear is increased.
And that has to do with the exponent?
Yeah, exponent. Exponent here is
less than
1, but because it's the shear stress on the
right. It would be less than 1 if you had the shear on it.
Yeah, that's right. I think that this data is 0.6. If you make sigma as a gamma dot power, that's 0.6. Okay. So with the last 10 minutes, I will show some arguments we have proposed that how the defect dynamics, how the defect loop evolve under the shear flow in a laminar system, and what kind of exponent of this could come out in that picture. That's what I want to show, hopefully in five minutes. And this is just the situation that viscosity exchanged as defect lines decreased. So this is a particular system, and when the system first prepared, that there's a lot of defect line here. I think the imaging is done by cross polarizer, optical mean, and with two cross polarizer, they could see this image, these defect lines. And before shooting, there's a lot of defect. And with the shearing of 1 minute and 30 minutes, that you can see the dramatic decrease of defect line and also a dramatic decrease of the viscosity. So that's just a illustration of why people think that the viscosity will be strongly dominated by the defect line. And in the past, there already had some theory to say what is a somatic defect. The first two is without consider the effects of defect, and those I will not be say further here. Okay, so what we consider in here is that we consider the layer phase with a lot of defect loop, and because the layer the character of the layer, the defect will have two different types. One is the edge dislocation, as one show here, that there's extra layer here, and the vertical one will be skew, that's shown here, and phone loop. Actually, in this picture, you can see also the edge here. There's edge here. If you put an opposite orientation of this picture and glue it together, that's become a loop. Okay. And we say that what a shear force will down to this defect loop. And this is well known that in a crystal system or a somatic system, defect line will experience a force by applying a force on a system, the defect line will move, and the source of the movement people consider as a source of as a force, and that force is called pitch color force, and which have this form. So this form you can see in standard electricity book, that. And to understand this idea is that for edge dislocation, when you apply a force vertically, of course, maybe I should consider this another arrow going downward. There's a force to pull apart layer, that's the particular stress components. Then, because then the spacing is increased, then it's the system will like to have this half layer going into the space to fill up the empty space pulled by the force. So that's give a movement of the defect. So this, and so that for the force, then I show that. Okay. So then, what is the shear stress when that will appear when you apply a shear flow? What is the shear stress acting on a defect loop? And if we done the analysis, just plugging all the orientation, I think that because of this orientation, take care of orientation, that you can easily find out the action of a shear stress on defect loop is that it will tend to grow one orientation of the loop and shrink another one. You see that these two loop is up this orientation, and one will be pushed outward by the shear flow, the shear force, shear stress, and another will be pushed inward by shear stress. But the crucial thing is that inside this loop, we can see that the layer will not be horizontal. It will be tilted inside each loop. It will be tilted as this shear, but it will be tilted. Of course, without shear, on average, we could have same amount of the defect loop. That means total area, same total area. So on average, the system will have no net tilting direction. But with the action of the shear force, it shrink this orientation and expand this tension. Then there will appear a net tilting of the automatic, the whole system, net tilting angles.
Suppose the edge and the screw dislocations move
on. Yeah, suppose that move by the shear. And this will give a very dramatic consequence that in an initially perfect aligned layer, this moving of defect loop will tilt the orientation a little bit. And in a direction such that the shear flow will convect the tilting further, then you can see that with the tilting convecting by further, that trend will change the orientation and eventually instability like some kind of instability should appear that. So and then eventually instability, of course, instability will eventually lead to creation of defect loop again with the consequence that the pair back to alignment. So this is a mechanism that shear flow could generate defect loop in a symmetric layer. So that's the basic, most crucial point, that shear flow in a perfect layer, the shear flow could generate a defect loop in the system. And then this defect loop will influence the reality property of the system.
Didn't you show the opposite?
Did I show the opposite?
The experiment. No, in the experiment, the shear eliminated defects.
Yeah, shear eliminated defects. Yeah, that's right.
It creates defects.
Yeah, but also this just a mechanism that creates defects. But how many defects will create? With how large of defect, that also could depend on shear.
So you're saying if there are no defects, the shear will create defects. Mm-hmm. If there are very many, it will eliminate defects.
We think the elimination of defects is due to by their self annihilation. If there's a lot
because
of defects. No, not because shear.
Because
of shear.
Showed, you showed evidence that shear dramatically eliminated defects. That's why that's the opposite.
I think that the experiments show that maybe the experiments and that defects maybe need more consider the shear more aligned the system. But of course, that should be right.
And what's the length scale of the lasers?
Pardon?
What's the length scale?
I think, I'm not sure, but it must be older, maybe 50 microns on this kind of scale. Yeah, typical length scale. Yeah, defect scatter light. Yeah, that's right. So of course, to transfer this idea into what is the reality response of system, we need to figure out how many defects were produced by shear flow and how many were annihilated by each other and what's the size of defect produced, because that's changed. That's change reality property. And fortunately, there's the way to arguments, but I think we'll probably not spend too much time to go through all the arguments. But the basic idea is that a loop, edge dislocation is actually the source of dissipation, because you want flow flowing to it, and if edge is stationary, there's a lot of permeation of the molecule need to be done to maintain that the edge is stationary. Then that will become a source of dissipation, and with that argument, then we could going through the argument that what is the size of the defects and how large and how is density of them. I think I'll just skip all the arguments. If anybody interesting, I can show it later. But what is the result is that the shear stress will scale as two-thirds of the shear rate. I think the basic idea, of course, I could need to clarify a basic idea. So clarify a point that The mechanism says that the defect, the shear will create defect, but how come it's still show the shear thinning that the viscosity decreased with the shear rate? That's because the defect loop size will also decrease with the defect loop, and that decreasing is stronger than the creation density of the loop, and these two effects combined produce a shear thinning behavior in this way. And we think this scaling form is, if we want to compare with experiments, it's quite good, or it's not perfect match. Actually, this experiment, a lot of people in this field.
The coefficients B and mu are obtained from other experiments.
Yeah, some experiments. You can
ask. There's no fitting.
No, there's no fitting on the Langlois curve. Okay, the red curve, we use these numbers, is this number, and this number actually is the number obtained by experiments for a typical system. Of course, different
without
system,
shear.
Without shear, yeah. But of course, different system will give scientific number of mu, this B and mu C, these are different parts, yeah. So the exponent comes okay, and we think the magnitude of viscosity also in the correct order of magnitude.
So those numbers are not specifically ACB? Yeah.
No, not specifically.
Oh.
Not specifically for ACB, but.
So how do you get this large difference?
I mean for a different system?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think for different system, of course, this B and mu will be dramatic different. I don't remember whether this number we take out from the different source, different paper is specific for ACB. I don't remember exactly that.
But the
slope
is different. The exponent is different.
Yeah, very different, of course. But I think maybe I need to mention that this experiment is quite astonishing for people in this field, that all these exponents are almost perfect, and all the three system is almost the same. Because in the past, there's actually there's more data the Homo experiment done for this data, of course, I didn't show here. And the exponent actually in a quite a large range, maybe 0.5 to 0.7 different people do in a different system. Even different people done on the same system, they could get a little different exponent, depend on, I think, probably depend on how good is the sample. So 0.5, 0.7, that's the general range, but it's not actually how high. The author here could get this correct. It's so good. So with that, I think this is what I have said in this talk, and I think I will end here. Thanks. I don't know. I think probably should involved, but we haven't had a good way to model it. Yeah. I think they are not important. It's more like instance that we haven't found a good way to describe them in the dynamics sense.
The famous system power, you assume some microscope
mechanism
for growing the moving the defense.
Yeah, that's right. Growing and moving,
moving
the defense due to translocation of pointers from membrane layers, which is, at least in liquid systems, known to be extremely slow compared to the diffusion within the layer. Like, you imagine, like, going for within the layer. Maybe I should. The diffusion of molecule between layers, it's not the mechanism for moving of defects. That's the mechanism basically for giving this parameter mu. How difficult for flow? So that diffusivity is this description of how difficult for flow to pass a fixed defect loop. Right? If the molecule really don't like to diffuse to different layer, then there's a lot cause a lot of entropy to fix the defect loop, defect line. Sorry, to fix the defect line, and from that diffusivity corresponding to a dissipation of the how much dissipation of a defect loop will cause, and that's then appear in the reality.
Thank you, speaker.